we have been discussing the seventh chapter, we had seen that Lord describes that because of ignorance, people do not realize their divine manifestation. We are all truly divine. The unchanging aspect within us, our real self, is divine. And its ignorance makes us suffer in this world because of bondages and various desires, which again keep on piling misery on us. The true self that does not change at all, in spite of the changes in the body, in spite of the changes in the mind, that self one has to see as different from the body and the mind. The body is a manifestation of it. Mind is a manifestation of it. That is the variety that is created out of this one self. This self doesn't change in space and time. And therefore, it is a very interesting aspect to observe that although we are different in our body and mind, as a self we are all same. That is why we say God is in all of us. What is the sign of the God in us? The idea or the awareness that I am. We all are fully aware, perfectly convinced of this, that I am. And yet, we have never seen I. We have never heard I. We see everything else. You may say that I stand in front of the mirror and do I not see myself? Well, that you do not even see your body there. You see the reflection of your body. And you don't see the I there. The I as body is not a very correct idea. One manifestation of the self is this body, no doubt. But it is a changing manifestation, like a wave on the ocean. The wave rises, grows, falls back again in the ocean. So similarly, this expression of body rises, grows, and again falls. Where does it come from and where does it go back? It is the self. And that is immutable. Lord says that to teach this truth, I assume the form. And so that we all will know that like that, I too am divine. By looking at the manifestation of God, when we see that that is divine, then that means I too must be divine. As the story goes, it is a very famous story told in Vedanta that a goat or a sheep, a tigress attacked a sheep, but in the process what happened was the tigress was pregnant and it gave birth to a baby tiger and died there. Now the sheep, the flock of sheep took that baby tiger and then took and make that tiger grow. Now that tiger also then started making sounds like sheep. It started eating grass. It didn't have the idea that it is tiger. But another tiger one day was looking for prey and saw this flock of sheep. And to the amazement of this tiger, saw a grown up tiger along with the sheep going there. So it decided to catch this sheep tiger and teach that tiger that you are a tiger like me, you are not a sheep. So it caught hold of that sheep tiger and told,
"Hey, you are tiger like me, you are not a sheep. Don't say meh, 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 meh."
It is, now this sheep can't believe, you know, how can I be? Like, can we believe we are divine? You, if I am told, well, you are divine, you are God. Then I'll say, well, I am such a tiny fellow, how can I be God? And I am being buffeted all the time by circumstances, by pleasures and pains, elations and depressions. I suffer from all these. How can I be God? So, the same story, that sheep, tiger, was pulled to a lake. And this tiger told, look at your reflection. Look at my reflection. Do we not look alike? Whatever I am, you too are also the same. So that is how, you know, by seeing the divine example, we do learn that we are divine. God becomes man so that man may become God. So that is the purpose of the divine incarnation. And sadly though, Lord says that param bhavam ajananto, they then take me just a human being. That because people see only the appearance, either they conclude that I am man like them, do not look at the divine within. Or other aspect in which we are very adept in a way, we Hindus are very adept in that. What do? We think that, well, God is God after all, and we need not, you know, follow that. After all, he was God, so we make an image, keep it in the shrine, offer flowers and so forth, and tell God, well, you shower your blessings, but just remain there, and don't cause any interference in our lives. So we miss the lesson from the divine life. Therefore, it is God says that, well, mohitam nabhijanati mamebhya paramavyayam. That in the 13th verse, Lord says that being deluded by the changing aspects of the world, the people do not know that who am I? Ebhya param avyayam. These beautiful words, that param avyayam. Param means beyond, transcendental. The true nature of ours is transcendent over the changing names and forms. And we know that the names may change. Like a person may have one name, but the name can be changed by some filing an affidavit and the court, no, I don't like this name, I want to change it. Or I can assume different names for various reasons. So name is not exactly my identity. Then my form, continuously changing thing. It is when you were, say, 2 months old, your form was not like that. So the form also keeps on changing. Who am I then? I am not touched really by these changes, transcendent over all that changes. And it is avyaya, means unchanging, that which never changes. So something that is in all of us, beyond change, and yet we do not recognize it. This thing is beyond every change, and we have to recognize that. Why should we be recognizing that? Because that is the only way to get to the storehouse of happiness and freedom that we all seek. We all seek happiness here, but just as, you know, when you want to get something, you have to go to the store, you know, where it is there. If you want to buy milk, you go to, say, Stop and Shop or something where it's available. So similarly, when we want to get happiness, where should we go? Where happiness is, where happiness is available. We foolishly think that happiness is in this particular thing, happiness is in a candy, happiness is in this person or that person, and so go there to get it. And we don't get it there because basically it is not there. We get a feel of it for a little while, but we immediately come to the conclusion that this is not exactly what I was looking for. Why? Because the source of happiness is always the self. Even when you are getting happiness from a candy, let us say, the happiness really is not felt in the candy. If we observe, it is always felt within, because that is the source of happiness. Similarly, freedom. We seek freedom. We say we are citizens of a free country. How much freedom do we have? The biggest bondage that we suffer from is the bondage of our own tendencies, our passions, our unending web of desires that keeps us bound all the time. And therefore, we need to know that what is the source of this freedom? We will see that as matter, we are ever bound. Matter is subject to laws, and law means bondage. As spirit alone, we are free, and therefore, we have to understand and work accordingly to realize our true self. So that is why the all-pervading Lord assumes a human form that is called God incarnation and teaches mankind. But we need to learn. You know, learning is a different thing. There can be many teachers, but if I decide not to learn, it is not possible for us to learn. Like that story, the king announced that anybody who can teach me to make jalebi, I will give him half the kingdom. And there was many cooks went on, you know, that we can teach king how to make that jalebi. But every time the king said, I don't understand what you are teaching, get away. And the ministers were scared, you know, king's advisors and ministers, that anybody will be able to teach you how to make jalebi. But will that fellow be able to govern the kingdom? You will be losing your half kingdom for nothing. But king was wise. He said, they may be teaching, but who is going to learn? If I refuse to learn, who has the capacity to teach me? So if we decide not to learn from God, then we remain like that. God says that they don't learn this. So he says that there is no way of getting over this terrible bondage, which is called in Indian philosophy by this word Maya, nations. That bondage of I and the perception of the world as real. It is not real, and yet we base all our actions, base all our activities and perceptions on this basic mistake that there is, this is I and this is world. But we can never draw a boundary between them. Try, you know, try and you will see you cannot draw where I ends and the world begins. You will never be able to draw that boundary line. And this is one expression of Maya or nations. It's translated in various ways, ignorance. And so Lord says that, it is the 14th verse, Daivi yesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mame vaye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. This divine illusion of mind, constituted of the gunas, is indeed hard to surmount. Those who take refuge in me alone get over this illusion. This is a very oft-quoted verse from Bhagavad Gita and very important too. It sounds fanatic in a way that, well, Lord says that unless you take refuge in me, what an egotistic person. There is no way you can get salvation unless you take refuge in me. It appears to be a statement full of ego. Seems that why there shouldn't be any other way? Why should we take refuge in God? Is there really no other way? Our ego tells us that why should I take refuge in God? I don't need to take refuge in God. Maybe I am I not capable enough. I am a very intelligent person. I can study mathematics. I am a topper in my class in this subject and that subject. And I can also, I have done many, many wonderful works. And if not me, there are other great intelligent people. They can just unravel this mystery. Why should we take refuge in God? In earlier days, people didn't have much understanding of these natural phenomena. So, therefore, they used to think of God, that why the rains come? Because gods bring them. Why there are day and night? Because God made them. You read it in Bible that God made the day and night. So, earlier they didn't have the understanding and therefore they needed God. God made the light and darkness and so forth. They didn't know. Now we know science. Science has told that it is just the movement of the earth and other things, and that is why it causes that. Of course, we may have still some problems not solved, but as we proceed, we are sure to solve them also. So we really don't need to take refuge in some imaginary idea of God. That is a very natural tendency that comes in us. And this is something that again consolidates the bondage. Bondage becomes formed by this idea. It proceeds like this, that, well, I can understand all this. Now, what are these limitations that we work with? If we see that we cannot transcend these limits on the basis of our ego, it is something that is not having this ignorance or the ego that is the outcome of ignorance, that can alone bring a rescue to us. It is like, suppose you run in a closed room, keep on running. You do not go out of the room because it is the closed room. You can run very fast, but then you are running in the closed room. A donkey is, a stick is attached to the head and a carrot is hanging from the stick down. So the donkey feels, well, if I walk long enough, I will be able to eat that carrot. just a step more, just a step more, because the carrot is seen right in front, but the stick is tied to the head. And so, as the donkey moves, the carrot also moves. Our life goes in vain doing such things, you know, that a little more and the happiness will be in my fist. Right now I am not getting it, but let me get married and then there will be all happiness. And then, but we don't see the lives of other married people, how happy are they. But I feel that, no, I will be very different. Let me get married. Those people didn't get happiness due to marriage. They didn't know. I will be happy. Or, I am not happy right now because I don't have enough money. Let me get enough money. Every time, the terrible problem, I want to do many things, but no money. Let me get lots of money. Then I will not have to take refuge in God anymore. Money can do anything. Money is God. So let me get enough money. Well, does anybody have found enough money? Everybody is after getting more and more and more. The hunger goes on increasing, in fact. And the goal remains as far away as it was. It is not that the rich people automatically become happy. You can see the lives of so many rich people. Many are suffering with depression. Many of them have so much problems because of their anger and other difficulties that they have to face in life. So far from happy, far from satisfied, becomes that life. You may be a very highly intelligent person, may do lot of research work, may end up getting many Nobel Prizes, and yet it will not make you solve this riddle of who am I. That is the toughest thing, because all this so-called knowledge tries to know the object. But, well, who is the subject? How can you know the eternal knower? For that, you have to use a very different means of knowledge. These conventional means of knowledge already are based on this division of subject and object. And therefore, they cannot transcend this idea at all. So, caught in it. What is the state of our knowledge? As that Chandogya Upanishad, there is that beautiful dialogue between Sanat Kumar, a young teacher, and Narada, a highly learned person. Highly learned means how? This Narada has studied everything. He comes to Sanat Kumar and says, Sir, please teach me. Now Sanat Kumar says, well, fine, but tell me what you have already learned so that I can tell you something after that. I need not waste my time in teaching you that which you already have learned. So tell me, what have you learned already? And Narada begins the list. It is really an exhaustive list. Narada begins by saying that I have studied Rigveda, Bhagavan Adhyemi, Ayurveda, Bhagavan Adhyemi. All the Vedas I have completely studied. Then all the other sciences, mathematics, physics, chemistry, all those names are there. Engineering, architecture, in fact, even the music, dancing. You speak of any science and Narada has studied it. Everything he has studied it. Now what remains to be studied? What remains to be known? it appears that all the frontiers of this kind of knowledge have been conquered by Narada already. What then remains to be known? And Narada clarifies that himself, saying that, look, mantra vidosme natu atmavid. I know only the words. This is the nature of our knowledge in this world, that we just go on multiplying the words, go on dividing further and further, and give a name to it, and we get the idea that we have known it. Like if we say just animals, we don't know much, but if we divide them, there are 10 phylums of them, then we feel, give them a name, you know, and give them some very difficult to pronounce, that kind of name. And then you get the really feeling that yes, you have known, you have done lot of study. It is like that, that it is, then you go on dividing them further and you feel that what you have known so many names. What more? Narada says that this is the problem, that I have and got so many words, natu atmavit. I do not know the self, and that is the cause of my suffering. I have known everything, but because I have no knowledge of the self, I am suffering. So I am therefore seeking refuge in me, because you know that. And therefore, please bless me. And then it follows a very beautiful dialogue as to, you know, how one transcends from one level to the next level, and ultimately this Narada arrives at that knowledge of the self and thus becomes fulfilled in life. So, Lord says, Mame vaye prapadyante, those who take refuge in me. So here comes a little difficulty that we need to understand. Here, it is not to a person Krishna, but to the principle Krishna. Otherwise, we may have this conflict that, well, you know, hi Krishna, I am a devotee of Lord Shiva. Let me devote only to Shiva. I don't understand this. Somebody will say, well, I am a Muslim. I don't buy all this. Why should I surrender to Krishna? No, I will surrender to Muhammad, maybe. Somebody may say, no, I do not agree with any of these. I am devoted to Kali, goddess Kali, and then that is my duty. Why should I take refuge in Krishna? In Bengal, that is always a tussle. You know, there are a sizable number of Vaishnavas, there, a big number of followers of Lord Vishnu, and there is a big number of followers of that divine mother Kali. And they always have lot of arguments that who has more capacity to bring liberation. The followers of Lord Vishnu say that, well, Lord Vishnu alone can bring liberation. He is the fairy man who can cross you, take you across this ocean. He is the boatman. Lord Vishnu's boat you have to take, and then you can go beyond. The followers of Mother Kali, they make a joke with it. They say, well, our Mother Kali is the Empress of the universe. Do you mean she will herself become a boatman? She has kept a boatman in her service. And she tells that boatman, oh Vishnu, please take this fellow across this, and then that Vishnu does it. So it is, what does it mean when Lord says, Mahameva? You will see similar statements in Bible also. In the New Testament you read that Jesus makes exactly similar statement. that especially in the book of John, you read this again and again, that you have to come to me. But that me is not a physical entity. That is why one has to read this in the light of the previous verse, that Param Bhavam Ajanantaha Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram, or this is the previous distinct, that people consider that Mamebhya Param Avyayam, that I am the reality beyond, unchanging reality. That is what is the nature of Lord. That is to be understood, not a changing person, but the principle. And this is a great training, friends, to understand the principle rather than the changing person. Unchanging principle should become the focus than the changing person. Person means covering. If you look at the origin of this word, persona in Greek means covering. So, it is just the covering. Do we get, that is what happens, we get trapped in the appearance and miss the inner essence. So, it is a training that we have to give to our minds to probe deeper and to the principle. Like when we say that I love this person, my wife or my husband or my friend, my mother, my father, I love. Just try to see, what do you love? What do you love? Do you love the body? What do you love? Do you love the nose? Do you love the eyes? Do you love the ears? Or what? These are the changing things. If you see what do you love, you will come to the conclusion that is which is same in I and the other person, that is really the source of love. Love means that feeling of oneness, that I and that person, we are one. And where is that oneness? Certainly, it is not a heap of flesh and blood is loving another heap of flesh and blood. That idea is silly. There is no such love. Again, the heap is changing, you know. When you eat, something gets added to that heap. And when you spit, something gets subtracted from that heap. So, what is that one heap loving another heap? It is, what is the inner sameness, inner oneness? We will see that the oneness of the self, that self is universal. That is a great equation that Vedanta has proposed to the world to understand. That what you feel as something inside you, know that it is the same as the universal reality. Atman is same as Brahman. Brahman means the all-pervading reality, that which is everywhere, that is called Brahman. And Atman means my innermost reality. If we try to probe that, what is my innermost reality, we will see that it is same as Brahman, the all-pervading reality. The appearances are different, but the inner essence is the same. So, unless we take refuge in that inner essence, there is no way we can get liberated. If we get caught in the appearances, we will never get to liberation, freedom, or happiness. Suffering will be our lot. It is, therefore, it is very important we have to identify our true desire. What is it that we really seek in life? It is that desire is to be identified. And then direct all our energies towards that. And then it is for sure we will succeed in that. Mamevaye prapadyante. These are very strong words. That those who come to me alone. Shankara, in his commentary here, says, therefore, that who is this I? Atmavanta, the one who is your own self. Each God is our true self. You are not taking refuge in somebody outside. Taking refuge in this person or that person, that is not told here. Taking refuge in your true self, and that is the self of everyone. Swatma Bhuta, Sarvatma Bhuta. That it is Swatma Bhut means it is that God who is your own self, and also that which is all pervading. There is a very beautiful that idea described in Ramayana. That Lord appears in the body as Rama. Now, which Ram do you worship? It is, the question came in this Ramayana, especially in the beginning of Tulsi Ramayana, you read this question. In that story of Ramayana written by the great sage Tulsidas. So, he begins that by a dialogue between two sages. One of them says, well, I see that Rama was a great man. He did some good acts, but I don't see how is he divine. What is the meaning of Rama being divine? I don't get it. So, it is told that that Rama whom you see as the son of King Dashratha, that Rama who is the son of King Dashratha, that is also the Rama who is in every being as its essence. And that Rama is also therefore this whole universe, and that Rama is transcendent over all appearances in the universe. So that Rama one has to take refuge in. Not just the person, but the principle. Person is very good as example of the principle. But principle is transcendent over the person. If we do not catch hold of the principle, then the person is doesn't have any value. It is only on the basis of the principle that a person can be valued. So therefore, Lord says that unless you take refuge in that, you have no way of salvation. You cannot go beyond this Maya. Whatever you do, that will be still in Maya. Your all learning is in Maya. Whatever you learn is within that. That nice explanation of that in that book, Philosophy of Physical Science by Arthur Eddington. It's a very beautiful book. All students of science should study that book. Arthur Eddington was a great physicist of last century. In fact, founder of what is now called astrophysics. So, he has written this book and gives this idea that, look, how can the science cannot find out all the truths just because of its method? It confines itself in the study that you can do through your sense organs. So whatever cannot be caught in your sense organs, it falls outside the purview of science. Science cannot study it. He gave a very nice example of a net. If you want to study, say, creatures in water, then a person, a scientist, goes there and takes a net and puts the net in the water, and whatever creatures come in the net, he brings them out and starts studying. obviously he first draws, you know, two conclusions by studying his first sketch, that all these creatures, they are in the water, they are at least 2 inch long. And the second conclusion he draws is that they can survive only in water. Next time he again puts another time this net, and then examines the catch, he changes his second conclusion. Oh, my first, that conclusion in earlier time, it was wrong, because he probably caught a frog who can survive outside water also. So, he changes that. But as many times he can make the experiment, his first conclusion that every creature in water is at least 2 inches long remains the same, because that is the distance between the two threads of his net. So every creature has to be, by very definition, at least 2 inches long, and therefore cannot study anything smaller than that. So we throw the net of our senses on this world, and whatever catch we get in it, that we study, that we observe, draw some correlations in that, and that is what we call science. But whatever cannot be caught in this net cannot be studied, and therefore even that which is caught is also not properly studied. It is a very important thing to know that, well, let us be satisfied then with what we, the study of what we catch by our senses. But that study also is imperfect, erroneous, unless you know the deeper truths. Because, say you catch a fish which was 3 inches long, but the fish at its birth was not 3 inches long, so you will never be able to study the process of the growth of the fish when it became 3 inches long. So what appears to be caught by the senses depends a lot on what cannot be caught by the senses, and therefore it can never unravel the mysteries of this universe. The only way, therefore, is to take recourse to someone who is not already caught in this maya. Some years back, my car was stuck in the snow. You know, it happens here very often. There's a lot of snow, and as I took it out and was going on this back Fons Alley, it went a little ahead and then got stuck. Now, I thought that if I press the accelerator a little more, maybe it will just force itself out. But no, the wheel was turning and then getting deeper and deeper in the snow. And I saw, well, this is not the way to get the car out of the snow. I have to take recourse to something that is not already stuck. The car that is already stuck on its own cannot come out. It needs something that is not already stuck. So another gentleman came, and then that person helped with some pushing and something, so we could then push it out. Then it was fine. So we are like that, stuck. The more accelerator we press, the more it gets stuck. That is the nature of bondage that we have here. That every effort, as it were, becomes another bond put around us. That's all. It is that is how Maya. There is that beautiful song by a great Sufi sage, Kabir Das. Kabir has sung that. Kabir has written that song. That Maya maha thagini hum jaane. Maya is big, cheat, big cheater. Maya cheats. And how does it does this Maya cheats? The big cheat. It gives you the illusion that you are going, you are becoming free, while making you more bound. That is its tricks. So, it goes to somebody who feels that I am practicing big yoga and I will be liberated. Yogi ke ghar yogini hoi baithi. That in the house of a yogi, she becomes yogini and binds. Then, in the whatever a person feels that I will be studying lot of scriptures, then by studying the scripture I will get liberated. That study becomes the Maya there. Maya takes the form of that very study and the fellow gets stuck in it. Therefore, our ego increases by more study. I have studied all these scriptures. What do you guys know? So what has happened in the process? Just see. Instead of liberating, the ego has become still further more firm. That's all. So that is how these efforts that we make in Maya, they do not really help to get over it. We get the efforts have to be made properly, scientifically. Scientific in the sense that we have to take recourse to something that is not in Maya to get ourselves out of it. So this person, Lord says that that is what you have to take recourse to. That is God. That is what is meant by I. That Lord alone will be able to help you out. Otherwise, you by your own efforts, my own efforts, what does it mean? You know, I get more and more, you see, powerful in that. I will get liberated. Well, that I is, what is the nature of the bondage is this I. I is the problem. And therefore, this I will not be able to resolve it. It is to be destroyed. There is the liberation is not that I will get liberated. I am bound and after putting in lot of efforts, I will get liberated. No, it is not that kind of liberation that is being spoken here. What is this liberation? This removal of I. That one nice story that Swami used to tell, one Swami had told it very nicely, that when you have this eye trouble, you go to an eye specialist. But we have not only this eye trouble, I did this, I am such and such, I am this. See how much we spend time in speaking or thinking or defending this puny ego. This puny ego takes most of our time, most of our mental energy. We have this problem, this I problem. So, for this eye problem, you go to eye specialist and that eye specialist may give you eye drop. For this eye problem, say go to Sri Ramakrishna. And Sri Ramakrishna is that eye specialist. And he doesn't give you eye drop. He gives you drop eye. Drop eye. That is the way. Will put you more in bondage. And his life was the example of this. See, Bhagavad Gita, the greatest commentary, as Swami Vivekananda says, the greatest commentary on Bhagavad Gita is life of Lord Krishna. The life that he led, that gets expressed, that gets voiced here. That is why it is so powerful. It is based on his own experience, his own living, that there is no attachment to anything, no identification with body whatever, and therefore he can say that the one who comes to me will get liberated. It is question of to what we join. If we join our identity with whatever changes, like body, mind, many qualities that we have associated, which are qualities of body and mind. So if we identify ourselves with that, we are identifying ourselves with something that changes, and thus we get caught in that bondage, always shifting, always changing, always confused, who am I? We may know exactly maybe how many stars are there in the sky, we can count them, but well, who am I? I don't know that. So, that is the tragedy of our knowledge. It is, what about our identification with unchanging? That shift has to take place. Instead of identifying ourselves with changing, we have to learn to identify with something that does not change. Actually, does it not, the very idea of identity means associating yourself with something that doesn't change, like your ID. What does it mean if you have, say, at a workplace or at school, you have your ID? That ID is based on something that doesn't change about you. If you go with a different coat, and if the ID is based on your coat color, then you will not be allowed there, because the ID was based on the coat. So something that is to some extent not changing, like at the airport I was told, if the a person there at the counter took the flashlight and put on the eyes of my ID, the driving license, and then I asked him, do I look similar as the photograph is, and do I look like that? And he said, well, your eyes look the same. So that is what he is looking at, something that doesn't change. And your face may change if you grow a big beard. The facial appearance will change. But something that does not change, one has to learn to identify with that. So this shift is very important. Learning to associate I with that in us which does not change, rather than associating with that and that keeps on changing, and that throws us continuously in confusion. We shall see, the question comes, then when this is the case, why all people do not take refuge in you, O Lord? The question may come, that why only a few take refuge in you? Why all do not take refuge in you? The answer will be in the next verse, and we shall try to see that next Friday. Any questions? Yes, Charles?
Ramana Maharshi saw a guy on a mountain. Was that because he was an exceptional person and he was able to see God on a mountain rather than in an avatar?
Well, you can see God in anything, because God is really everything. It is a question of, you say that before seeing God in the mountain, Ramana Maharshi did performed lot of austerities, and as a result, when the mind becomes purified, you see God in everything, like seeing ocean in every wave. Every wave is the manifestation of ocean, and therefore Ramana Maharshi could see that, and all of us can see that when we come to that stage. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya देवकी पुत्र गीतम एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मंत्रः तस्य नामानि याने कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।